or to students. Some question the number of tests and their frequency. Others, how they've affected teaching style. Are teachers teaching to those tests? Still others wonder about the fairness of tying teacher performance assessments to the results of these tests. And when it comes to the students themselves, many believe that students feel overwhelmed and inundated by the sheer number of tests they're asked to take. Someone was listening because the State Board of Education created a task force last year to look into testing, and last week that group met what was supposed to be a final time to reveal their recommendations. And today we look at some of those recommendations, which, by the way, are still in flux, with Dr. June Atkinson, North Carolina State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Atkinson is in Chapel Hill this morning, sitting next to Dr. Olivia Oxendine, a member of the State Board of Education and vice chair of the State Board's Education Task Force on Summative Assessment. Thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And joining us in our studio is Michael Landers. He's a Cabarrus County High School teacher who is also a member of the State Board of Education Task Force on Summative Assessment. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And WFAE's education reporter Lisa Worf is also with us. Good morning, Lisa.
Welcome. Good morning.
Dr. Atkinson, are you the person who formed this task force on testing, or the person who decided we needed a task force on testing?
Well, our State Board of Education Chair, Bill Kobe, officially appointed the committee, and that committee was appointed as a result of a recommendation that the Department of Public Instruction made to the State Board of Education. We asked the State Board of Education to determine what types of tests that we would need in order to continue to determine how our schools are doing, and that task force was appointed. Our big goal is that we want to get to the place where assessments are integrated into instruction, a place where people cannot tell the difference, per se, or a student cannot tell the difference between assessment and instruction. And we know that we have a big bridge to cross in order to reach that goal.
Why do we have tests for testing the knowledge base of the student and then tests that are used to assess the performance of a teacher? Why can't the same thing be achieved by the same test?
Well, in fact, that is the case. We know that tests are snapshots. They are not movies. They are just one measure of what a student is learning. As a student of many, many years, I've had to take many, many tests. Tests are not popular. They never have been popular. But we've yet to find a way to determine the knowledge base and the skills base of students without some type of assessment.
The chairman I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we have assessments that are mandated by the General Assembly and by the U.S. Congress through No Child Left Behind, now called ESEA. And North Carolina has had tests required since the mid-1990s.
The chairman of the State Board of Education, A.L. Buddy Collins, says that the current testing model is a very effective system of data collection, but it's not a very effective system of informing instruction. But this has been going on, as you said, since the 1990s. Do most people agree with Chairman Collins? And if that's the case, why have we been using these tests and this method for so long?
Well, we have to remember that a test is a snapshot. It cannot ever show the entire spectrum of learning for a student. We do know that they are an indicator of how our students are doing. They're not the end-all to be-all, and they were initially designed to take a snapshot of how well we are doing in public education and to determine where there are places we need improvement. By the virtue of a test being given at the end of the year, there is little time for a teacher or a student to be able to have mid-corrections or to have improvements. And that's one of the reasons why this the task force is looking at another model.
I want to come back to that, the testing in at the end of the year versus getting an assessment of student performance as the year goes along in a second. But before we talk about that and before we talk about the task force recommendations, which, as we say, are still in flux, let's talk about how we got there. Dr. Oxendine, you've been involved in public education in three different states. How did we get to the point where so much emphasis has been placed on standardized testing at the federal and the state level? And how do we in North Carolina compare to other states around the country in terms of how we test and how many tests we have?
Well, first of all, I don't think that North Carolina stands out, stands alone in the world of testing and or assessing students and using an array of data to determine the effectiveness of not just teachers but also principals, but more so teachers. Well, we're focused on teachers. So it's where we are in this country in terms of accountability, whether we're talking about accountability of schools, accountability of states, accountability of teachers, accountability of students. More is expected of public schools by the public, our various stakeholders. And as a state board member and a citizen of North Carolina, let's talk about a citizen of North Carolina. I want to know about the achievement of students, the million-plus students we have in North Carolina. I want to know about the effectiveness of our schools and our teachers. So I can't imagine how we would make funding decisions, how I would make a decision about the teachers of my grandchildren, the schools of my grandchildren, make decisions about curricula, about textbooks, about pedagogy, without some system of accountability that's going to provide an array of data. Yes, we can become overwhelmed with data, but in North Carolina, as well as the nation, I would say, our teachers have become very, very smart and savvy about data collection and about reviewing data and using data to change instruction, to improve technique, to identify and procure the best resources.
Mm. Mike, I know that you asked the question about testing and how it compares to other states. The No Child Left Behind or the Education or the Elementary, Secondary, and Education Act requires every state to assess reading and mathematics in grades 3 through 8, and it also is a requirement that reading, that English language arts, reading, biology, and math be assessed at the high school level. Mm-hmm. So every state has to have those end of grade and end of course tests. There is also another requirement that science be assessed once in elementary and once at the middle school level.
We talk a lot about education on this program because we're the home of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system, which for some reason gets a lot of interest over and above whatever I experienced when I was a kid going to school. But Michael, we're going to hear from a teacher today because Michael's a high school teacher, Michael Landers. Your wife is also a teacher in Cabarrus County.
Yeah.
How did you come to be selected to be part of this education task force that's looking into testing? They actually asked a teacher to be part of this.
Yes.
Are you the only teacher?
I'm the only high school teacher. Okay. There are three teachers on the committee, one in elementary school and one from the middle school, and I'm the only high school English teacher.
And how did you come to be part of this?
Well, I received an email from the State Board of Education office that I'm not sure who it went to and how many people, but I responded to it and expressed interest because obviously this is a very, very important issue for students and teachers. And I received some follow-up and asked to send in a resume and a bio. And I sent it in and then was asked if I could commit. And by all means, talked to my principal, told him I would be out once a month from October through June Is that okay? And he endorsed it and said yes.
You know, so often when we talk to teachers on this program, we don't get to talk to them very often because usually they're in class during this program. But when we do, they've expressed frustration that a lot of things have been taken out of their hands and they can't do what they do best, which is to use their own creative juices to teach the subject that they know so much about to their students. Now that you're on this panel, and you've been on this panel for about a year, it's kind of like you've been able to peer back behind the curtain, to pull the curtain back on the wizard and see how the inner workings go. Has anything surprised you? Has anything pleased you? Do you understand better as a teacher now what administrators and people at the state level go through to make all this stuff happen?
Yes. I'm happy in the classroom after realizing all of what goes into behind the scenes. The amount of legislation, the amount of politics that often play a role in the decisions, like Dr. Atkinson said, the federal laws that we have to follow in addition to the state legislators' creation of certain statutes that we must also follow, it's a tangled web. And when it eventually filters down to the school, teachers don't see all the background and they just wonder, why do we have another test?
Yeah.
Why are we doing this? Why is this test asking these questions? And they feel disenfranchised because of what's coming from outside and not what's focused on within their classroom during the school year.
Right. Lisa Worf is with us from WFAE News. She covers education as part of her job here, and I know that you do a lot of talking to administrators and teachers and parents and even students within the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system. What have you been hearing about these tests from all those people?
Well, you know, in CMS is a particular issue because a few years ago under Dr. Gorman, what we've seen kind of go through the state level, the NC final exams, CMS tried to do their own versions of that. So basically, you know, you have these big standardized end of course, end of grade exams, but all those other courses that are not tested, they were trying to come up with their own tests so that they could evaluate teachers. And that just kind of struck off here in CMS a big outpouring of concerns about the amount of testing. You certainly hear from teachers and from parents that are frustrated. And you hear this, you know, there's a task force that's trying to figure this out. So, it's trickled to state lawmakers who hear about the number of tests and feel that they should kind of look into the issue. But
in fact, some students have opted out of taking some of these tests, haven't they? They refuse to do it.
There's been a few. I don't think, and Dr. Atkinson can probably, talk to this better. There hasn't been a overwhelming amount that have. I mean, I think there's been a few here and there. And mm-hmm. if you opt out in North Carolina to certain tests, I mean, that does affect your grade. Yeah.
Wake County just opted out as an entire district of the North Carolina final exams.
Dr. Atkinson, how can they do that?
Well, first of all, we need to put in perspective final exams. Final exams are used to determine whether students are growing in a particular teacher's class. And since we do not have end-of-course tests for three courses at the high school level, several years ago, the local superintendents and others unanimously agreed that since we had to have a way of determining student growth, that the state, in collaboration with school districts, would develop final exams. And the initial purpose was to take the place of the final exams that teachers develop as a matter of practice. Since I was a student in Virginia and when I was a teacher at Myers Park High School.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a substitute for the teacher test. We would have a final exam generated from teachers across the state.
Let me stop you there. We have to take a break. We're coming back with more in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Black Hawk Hardware, located in the Park Road Shopping Center, locally owned and mismanaged since 1977. Black Hawk, where hardware, home, and garden meet. Info at blackhawkhardware.com. You know, society and medicine have changed substantially in the last 50 years. 50 years ago, doctors smoked, sometimes while examining patients. Very few people really exercised, and medicine was just beginning to make significant advances. So that got us to thinking about the evolution of health and health care. Where might we be headed? Where might we be 50 years in the future? So we've invited three medical professionals to explore the past and help us imagine the future tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, audio streaming services and podcasts are changing the way we listen to music, get news, and find entertainment. The rising popularity of on-demand audio and what it means for consumers, creators, and advertisers.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the report to the North Carolina State Board of Education on assessment recommendations for testing throughout the state with Dr. June Atkinson, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, and Dr. Olivia Oxendine, member of the State Board of Education and Vice Chair of the Education Task Force on Summative Assessment, of which Michael Landers, a high school teacher from Cabarrus County, is a member. He is also, all three of them are with us, along with Lisa Wharf, who reports on education for WFAE News. Dr. Atkinson, I had to interrupt you in the middle of your answer to my question about whether how Wake County, for instance, can opt out of participating in some of these exams. If you'd like to finish that thought, please do.
Yes. Wake County has opted to use the scores from three tests, biology, math 1, and English language arts, to substitute for the growth that every teacher would have should the teacher not give a final exam. So what Wake County has done is to say that we want to have student growth for every teacher effectiveness score to be based on those three tests. This was an option that was available from the ESEA legislation.
That's the No Child Left Behind that you refer to.
Correct.
There are federal assessment tests. There are state assessment tests. Teachers give tests on their own. What's the point of all these different tests?
Well, first of all, the state and federal tests are one and the same. They're not two different tests. And, of course, it is really important for teachers to be able to give tests to assess how well their students are learning. And, of course, the teacher voice is very important in any discussion about testing, and the teacher voice is very important when it comes to developing the tests that we now use in North Carolina.
Michael, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Collins, if I might, I'll add a point or two about the various types of tests that take place in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Testing or assessment, I like to use the term assessment, especially at the classroom level. But those tests are very important. They're commonly called in the research known as formative assessments. And those are the kind of informal assessments that, let's say, Olivia Oxendine, a former English teacher, would not even administer. I might be seated beside a student, and I'm collecting data on that student's ability to write a sentence. That is a formative. Then we move up to a kind of a mid-level assessment known as an interim assessment. And one of the proposed recommendations coming out of the summative task force is to design an interim type assessment. We can go into that later. The final type of assessment or test is the summative or the cumulative or the big test, the large test that takes place at the end of the year, known as EOCs, EOGs. What is so important, and also the North Carolina final exams in the content area, what is so important, and a point that has been made repeatedly by members of the task force, is that principals and superintendents and classroom teachers, that we all, and the State Board of Education, Department of Public Instruction, that we all come up with a clear communication plan to inform our stakeholders and our parents of the various types of assessments that are given during the course of the year. If we help our parents understand the difference between that formative, the interim, the summative, and use everyday layman language, not the edutalk that often confuses the world, and educate our parents about assessment, the purpose, the value, how that information is in the best interest of their child, I think we can take this topic far down the road in terms of the angst that has been generated over time. This isn't something that happened within a year or two. This has been growing probably for the last decade or two.
And Dr.
So
Oxendine,
that's very important. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Oxendine, why do you think testing could be improved in North Carolina? I mean, you have a task force that's looking at this. I mean, what are the problems with how it's currently administered?
Well, I think some of it comes down to communication about implementation. From standards to lesson plans to assessment, we have got to do a more cogent job communicating among ourselves, with teachers, with principals, with the public about the rollout of an assessment alongside the rollout of standards. So it just comes down to, I suppose, just a maybe improved public relations approach around the topic of testing.
I believe that one of our challenges is that we have lost our balance. We have placed too much emphasis on the summative assessment or the end of grade or end of course test without looking at that test as being a snapshot. It is a snapshot. When you have those data, you can determine whether a school is making progress. You can determine if students have made progress. You can determine the impact of quality teachers such as Mr. Landers. So it is a snapshot. It is not the entire measure of what our schools are doing. And so I think that we've lost our balance of not looking at tests as a snapshot. We tend to look at them now as a movie, and they cannot be a movie.
Okay.
They are a snapshot.
Michael Landers, I want to talk to you for just a second as a teacher in the classroom. And you teach English. You teach what, AP English?
And English, too.
Okay. How do you test? Take out the national state tests. How do you test your students in your classroom with your tests?
My students do not really do multiple choice tests. It's a lot of performance-based projects and skills development in collaborative groups as well as individuals.
So give me an example of how you assess where your students are as they progress through the year. How do you do that?
I do it through performance-based learning products.
Meaning?
For example, for examining the standard of a student will be able to identify the emerging theme of a story.
Mm-hmm.
I have students, as we read, they'll track the theme, any evidence of something recurring through the story, and keep note of it. And then they get into groups at the end, and they create a digital media project where they make it very much like a news show, and they do the show in video form about the theme. So that's part of the curriculum and standards, but I have, as a teacher, a choice of how the vehicle that delivers that standard and that curriculum to the student.
So how do you issue a grade? How do you know, do you keep that? If you're not testing them and giving them an A through F.
Standards-based, skills-based. We're all trying to, Cabarrus County Schools, for example, is converting over to a more skills-based mm-hmm. approach in the elementary and now up to the middle schools, where we're not focused on numbers and grades in terms of the traditional model, but does a student achieve a certain skill? And those skills are what is behind the grades that we often give. Mm. When a kid goes home with an 80, what does that 80 mean? what skills is he lacking and what skills is he suitable and strong in to maybe help another student. And we need to look at the skills that students are actually asked to perform and then make sure any formative tests that we use in our classrooms is assessing those skills.
If I understand this correctly, if I read this correctly, it is your opinion that the current system of assessment and accountability in North Carolina is not effective in improving growth in students or improving educator effectiveness. It is great at facilitating the placement of misinformed labels on schools, students, and teachers. That's a quote, and I believe it's from you. That's a pretty big statement. Why do you believe that?
I believe that's part of the precipitating factor behind the task force on summative assessment. And what we have is a system of accountability, which is rooted in our testing, that is purposed to label, and that's my term, to label students, schools, and teachers. And the data that's collected in our current system does a lot of labeling. For example, the teacher gets an effectiveness label. Does not meet standard growth, or exceed standard growth. Then the student gets a score, and that's basically the only thing a student actually receives is their numeric converted score. Mm-hmm. Again, they're not given skills or what they need to improve on. And then the real crux of the matter is the legislators have decided that our schools need letter grades. And those letter grades are clearly not a representation of all that the schools are doing. However, all that's publicized and sent out, as Dr. Oxendine said, is part of the communication and the publicizing of what our schools are doing. That gets the focus. And unfortunately, the focus is derived right from these tests.
And you know, with those A through F scores, yes, they're you know, using the test to come up with the scores. And you know, you'll hear a lot in conversations about testing, whether it's growth in scores. So the idea that it's not just like the end number you get, but how much you've actually grown throughout the year as a student, and you know, how is that based with other students, and you know, that is also used.
But if the test, be it a end of grade test or a pop quiz in the middle of the semester, if you get an A on the test, obviously you know the material. If you get a D, you don't. So why isn't that sufficient?
Let me give you an analogy. If I'm a basketball coach, for example. And what our current testing system does is that basketball coach works all week, Monday through Thursday, with his team. Mm-hmm. And on Friday night when the game happens, he is told at the door, you're not allowed in the gym. Your players will go and perform against this team, and then you're not allowed in. You have no right to see the game or watch a video later. On Monday, after his team loses, he's told, you must improve. You must improve. Mm-hmm. So Monday, he goes back to square one. And right now, the data that we're getting from the tests and the feedback is the same in the analogy of that situation. How can a basketball improve, for example, a center that's not boxing out or rebounding when he doesn't know anything but the score of the game? He doesn't know what students or what players had what weaknesses and doesn't know how to facilitate their improvement, but must make these blanket changes through the next week, and he may be missing the mark.
I'm not sure.
Let me follow up with what Mr. Landers has said. The State Board of Education has put guardrails around the use of end-of-course tests. For example, current state board policy says that an end-of-course test can count at least 20% of the student's grade. That's why the teachers such as Mr. Landers are so important, because if the final exam or the end-of-course test at the high school level is just 20%, then it's the 80% of that grade for that student does come from the teacher. When you look at the elementary level with the reading and mathematics and the science test, the state law is very clear. It says that a student's promotion cannot be based on one test. a teacher working with a principal must use multiple measures to determine whether a student is promoted. So I keep coming back to the notion that the test at the end of the year is just a snapshot. Mm-hmm. By its very design, it cannot be the total part of what a teacher needs to know in order to do better for students. It's just a snapshot, and that's why, as Dr. Oxendine mentioned, we have formative assessments to inform instruction along the way and interim assessments, and those decisions currently are made by each school and each teacher.
Mm-hmm. If I might add a couple of points to that, the best data a teacher can have to inform, to change, to modify, to improve instruction are the data that result from formative and interim assessments. I'm going to use this point to segue to one of our recommendations, proposed recommendations coming from the task force. We are proposing to pilot, and next year we will test a proof of concept idea known as through course assessments. And that will be, we're going to focus on grades 5 and 6. The information from this proof of concept will teach us a lot about whether or not you can take an assessment, a test, a large test, let's say, think about it as a CUM, and divide the items, or let's think about standards, over the course of an entire year and administer interim assessments based on a given set of standards throughout the year, and from that, the results from those tests will be the pertinent information, the best information that can guide the classroom teacher in terms of pedagogy. We hope that, talk about innovation in testing. I'm very proud that North Carolina has stepped forward with this idea. Dr. Atkinson can expound on this. I don't know whether another state in the nation is moving in this direction. We are. Those are the assessments that will make a difference in the daily, weekly progress of students.
So as I understand, as I understand this, according to that draft, the proposal in that report, you're recommending a state-developed through-course assessment model of 3 or 4 tests to replace local benchmarks in pilot districts, several districts that you will choose. What do you mean by through-course? What does that mean?
Well, it means that if you have, for example, 10 standards to teach in fifth grade math, then you would take those 10 standards, divide them, and assess, for example, standards 1 through 3 with the first assessment. And then you would give feedback to the teacher and to the student. It would identify where students need to make improvements. And so the teachers can make those improvements, and then you would go to the second test, which would include perhaps some of the items from the first test, but standards 5 through 6. And that's why we want to have a proof of concept to see if this will work. As a former teacher and as someone who travels throughout North Carolina meeting with teachers and talking with teachers about testing, I have found a common thread in their comments, and it's what Mr. Landers mentioned earlier, and that is that you want information in order to do better the next day or to help as that student do better the next day. And so this through course or the 3 or 4 assessments is a way to meet that quest or that desire of our teachers in our state.
When we have to take a break, and when we come back, I want to hear from you, Michael Landers, as a teacher in the classroom. Why do we need the state involved in a teacher assessing his own students, his or her own students, when in fact you are in the room with them every single day, and you're seeing what they know, one would presume, either testing it or using the skills assessments that you use in your classroom? Why do we need all of this? Why can't it just happen the way it's happened historically? We have to take a break. We'll come back and get an answer to that question, and we'll take a look at some of the recommendations in this draft report in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community Blood Center of the Carolinas. Blood donations historically decrease in the summer. Students hosting CBCC summer blood drives can earn college scholarships. Details at cbcc.us. Audio streaming services and podcasts are changing the way we listen to music, get news, and find entertainment. The rising popularity of on-demand audio and what it means for consumers, creators, and advertisers. Not to mention radio, for crying out loud. That's the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter, and we're coming right back.
That debt crisis in Greece, yeah, it's getting ugly.
Physical threats, swearing, spitting, we have that in a daily basis.
And that's not even in the official negotiations either. I'm Kai Rizdahl from the streets of Athens, next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Dr. June Atkinson, who is the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Olivia Oxendine, member of the State Board of Education and Vice Chair of the Education Task Force on Summative Assessment. They are in flux with their recommendations, but we'll get to some of them in this segment. And Michael Landers is with us. He's a member of that State Board of Education Task Force. You're a member of the State Board of Education, right? And you're also a member of the task force. No, okay. All right, member of the task force. And Lisa Worf is with us. Very confusing. From WFAE News. Now, we've been talking about testing and pilot programs and to test interim testing so that the teachers will know how their students are performing before the end of grade assessment. Why don't teachers know that already? Why don't you know that as a teacher in the classroom? How do you do it? We've already talked about how you do it, but why do we need these tests?
I do. I look at my students' growth throughout the semester as every teacher does. I am not anti-testing, and I am not anti-accountability. What we hope to accomplish with the task force is to make it informed accountability so that if I'm using a test in my class, I can look at that test. For example, I give my students a test of 10 questions. Every one of my students gets one of those questions wrong. The very first thing that I'm doing as a teacher is, what did I do wrong with that question?
Okay.
Because if I have a preponderance of my students getting that question wrong, it may be with the practice of teaching. What we do is we have these snapshots, the summatives at the end of the semester, and they are snapshots, but these snapshots inform our entire accountability system from the legislative end where they want schools having A through F letter grades now to the teacher effectiveness model where teachers are labeled and, of course, to the student with the score. We need accountability because it's taxpayer money. And it's part of the, Dr. Atkinson can explain the Constitution ensuring that all students in the state have a fair and equitable education. That's important. And in order to manage that aspect, there's got to be some system that reports to the state. However, right now, we have a system of tests that does not inform. And when you go into the classroom, and as a teacher, you're only concerned with those students and the curriculum in which you teach and how you teach it. At the end of the semester, my students take an end-of-course exam in English 2, which is part of the state responsibility, the state governance of those exams. After that exam is taken, I'm not allowed to see it. I don't know what is on that exam. I'm never given a report of what types of standards from what I teach all semester are on that report or on that test. I teach 41 standards of my curriculum, from speaking, listening, reading, and writing, the whole gamut of English language arts, 41 standards. The state has released one of these EOC exams for English 2. I did an analysis of it, and it actually tested 37% of those standards. The next year of that test, I don't know what 37% of those standards is tested. So just like my basketball analogy earlier, it's fine if I get a low score or a high score for my students in their proficiency or growth. But what I'm not enabled to do is actually look at this area my students were weak in.
So historically, Dr. Atkinson, why have teachers been locked out of the room?
Well, first of all, the tests originally were designed to take a snapshot of how schools are doing. There, it is very, very difficult to, in a two-hour or three-hour period to test everything a teacher has taught during a year. So it was a snapshot. It was to be used to determine how our schools are growing, how our students are growing, and it was also designed to determine how we would focus our resources. For example, if you have a school where just 10% of the students passed an integrate or made an acceptable proficiency score on reading in the fifth grade, and then you had another school where they had 90% of the students scoring an acceptable proficiency level, then that showed you that something is happening that is different in those two schools. So they were designed to start a conversation. They were not designed to answer all the questions about why one school is doing better than another. They were a piece of data used to help improve our schools in our state.
If I might add to that, I certainly understand where Mr. Landers is coming from, having been a classroom teacher myself and now a college professor, because I hear from my students. Dr. Oxenine, tell us more about what's going to be tested and tell me more about the aftermath of the test. And I will say that perhaps the next step that the State Board of Education and the Department of Public Instruction should take and can take is to provide a bit more defining information back to classroom teachers to answer some of the questions that Mr. Landers is raising this morning, because I understand, I can empathize with his concern.
That would be huge for all teachers.
And to the extent that we can, this is Olivia Oxendine with her classroom teacher hat on and a curriculum specialist for many years. I'm for it.
And I am too. I believe that we do need to give more and more information to the teacher so that the teacher and the students can improve achievement. To date, we have done the following. We have on our website a course blueprint for all of our courses, and that course blueprint identifies what percent of the questions on an end-of-course test would come from certain standards. For example, it may say that standards 1 and 2 would be 10% of the test. Standards 3 and 4 would be 15% of the test. So there is that blueprint to give one indication of the emphasis of what questions will be asked on an end-of-grade or an end-of-course test. And we do need to go the next step, as Dr. Oxendine and Mr. Landers have identified, to give more information. One of the reasons why that's difficult is that the tests were designed to get into the classroom as quickly as possible and get out of the classroom as quickly as possible. So within the confines of a summative assessment, you cannot have the breadth and depth needed to give that feedback. That's why the recommendation from the task force is so important about having the course test approach, because that would give us a better opportunity to give that feedback that our teachers want.
And it's important to note that the through course approach, because there are two terms, and I'm certainly not going to get into the weeds in terms of talking about validity and reliability, but those assessments must have a minimal number of items in order to provide the kind of information back to the classroom teacher in terms of standards achieved, standards not achieved. So these are not going to be pop quizzes.
And these tests are used not just to evaluate the progress of the students, it's also to assess the teacher performance in the classroom. And as I understand it, Dr. Atkinson, and correct me if I'm wrong, you believe that assessment and accountability need to be divorced because they are two separate issues. If that is your opinion, tell me how you do that.
Well, I don't quite understand your statement about that they should be divorced. You have to, I believe that tests, regardless of the form, constitute just one component of how you determine how well a student is doing, how well a teacher is doing, and how well a school is doing, and how well a district is doing. So tests, regardless of the form, are necessary, but they are not sufficient for the total accountability system. Mm-hmm. For example, as required by the General Assembly, the accountability system at the high school level includes multiple measures. It includes the three tests that I mentioned earlier. It also includes the graduation rate. It includes the number of students who take and pass advanced mathematics. So there are multiple measures in the accountability system. Tests should be just one component of the accountability system.
We've talked a little bit about these pilot programs that you're suggesting might take place in certain schools at the lower grade levels. In the high school level, you're talking about a different approach. You're talking about using an assessment suite for English language arts, reading, mathematics, and science, administered as pre-tests in grades 9 and 10 to target content skill that students must master before post-testing occurs in grade 11. I got to tell you, I have no idea what that means. What is a pre-test? What is a post-test?
Okay. Well, this is the way I explain it, and I'll use an example of when I taught at Myers Park High School in Charlotte. My students came to me the first day of school. I wanted to know what they knew before coming to my class. Mm-hmm. So I would give them a pre-assessment or a pre-test.
So a test that doesn't have any validity, it doesn't account toward their grade.
No, it just determines where the student is. Mm-hmm. And so that is the pre-test. Then at the 10th grade, there would be the interim. And that test's purpose would be to help schools determine how well they are improving growth and achievement of the students. So that's taking... that's taking the pulse. And then you have the 11th grade assessment, and that would be the assessment of what I learned from the 9th grade through the 11th grade. And growth would be determined based on where I was when my students or when students entered the 9th grade and then where they are now at the 11th grade. So that's how you would determine the growth of students. Growth of students is a really important aspect.
We've been testing like this in various different ways, but pretty much like this since the 1990s. And anecdotally, we hear reports of students graduating from high schools who cannot read, who cannot tell you what they read, who cannot write a sentence. How is that possible? After all these years of testing, how is it possible?
I think
that's a good...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mr. Landers.
I think that's going to be the case anecdotally with any system of accountability. As long as it's just a small percentage of what we actually assess for the students.
But if they get if they get a diploma, why can't they write a sentence or a paragraph?
That's a very good question, and that happens because it's not just reading or writing that's the focus on all the different schools. And sometimes schools across the country do social promotion, and that's been a practice that has pushed students who may have a skill.
But don't these assessment tests, these end-of-year grade tests, don't they put the kibosh on social promotion? If you get it, if you flunk the end-of-grade test, why are you promoted?
And Mike, there was a law passed, and we're just in the first few years, that basically was trying to get at this problem. Mm-hmm. And so it basically makes it more difficult. It requires more tests, basically, and make it more difficult for students to go on to the fourth grade, from the third grade.
Yeah, I have heard that my entire life, mm-hmm. about our kids graduate without being able to read and write. And as state superintendent, when I hear that comment, I always ask, could you please tell me the student you're talking about? Because what I want to do is to go back to that school and ask them the question, why does Sally or why cannot John read, mm-hmm. whatever you are saying? And I think sometimes that is used without any factual basis. But having said that, I do believe that we are doing the best we can. We are graduating students better prepared today than ever before, and we educate all of our children, and some of our children have disabilities, and they may be one of those students who did struggle with reading or writing.
We only have about 2 minutes left, and I want to get from you. I know that these recommendations that the task force is working on are still in flux, and they changed it as of 9:30 last night. But of the ones that you're looking more carefully at, which ones are you most excited about? Which ones do you think will help the most in both assessing the educational process of the student, but also the teaching style of teachers? And which one do you think will be adopted?
This is going to take 5 seconds.
Okay.
I would not say that the recommendations are in a state of flux. What is happening is we have, and Michael and I are serving on kind of a revising team.
Okay.
We're working through the wording of some those recommendations. So we're close to having those things ready to go to the state board.
I am most excited about the proof of concept with the through course model. I believe that will help teachers become more comfortable with the assessments, and that will provide a feedback loop that our teachers say that they need.
Michael?
I'm excited that the conversation has initiated and we're headed in a more transformative direction. But I also have questions that many teachers are still wondering about the new proof of concept. For example, in the elementary grades, if the state's dictating the standards, as you said, Dr. Atkinson, broken up by 10. You do a few standards in the first part of the year, and then a few standards the second part of the year. What does a teacher do in a classroom when they realize that their class on the first set of standards that were assessed were woefully low, and they have to already turn around and move towards the new set of standards for the next assessment? What do they do to intervene? I think I was not part of the elementary school portion of the task force, but that's something that should be looked at. At the high school level, we just really need to make sure we have feedback.
When can we look forward to these recommendations being concrete?
These recommendations will be concrete and within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
And let me stop you there. I'm sorry, let me stop you there because we're completely out of time. I'm sorry. Dr. June Atkinson, Superintendent of Public Education at the state level. Dr. Olivia Oxendine, member of the Education Task Force, Vice Chair of the Task Force. Michael Landers, a member of that task force, and Lisa Worf from WFAE News.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts,